This hour on Focus, we're talking about pet care. Sally Foote, a small animal vet from Tuscola who specializes in dog and cat behavior, is here to walk us through some of the best ways to help scaredy cats and dogs through thunderstorm season. Also with us today is Dr. Brendan McKiernan. He directs the Veterinary Teaching Hospital at the University of Illinois. Both our guests are ready to answer your questions about pet care, from physical ailments to behavioral problems. Do you have plans for getting your very first pet or a first pet for your child? Dr. Foote and Dr. McKiernan can tell you about what sort of responsibilities to expect, which animal has the most suitable disposition and care needs for where you live, and how to decide if the pet store or breeder you're dealing with is trustworthy and ethical. I'm Jim Meadows. We're talking about pets today on Focus, coming up after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Pet care is our subject today, and your pet care questions are welcome. My guests today are small animal veterinarian Dr. Sally Foote. She specializes in cat and dog behavior, and she blogs on her clinic's website. That's okawvetclinic.com, O-K-A-W, vetclinic, one word, .com. Also with us today, returning to Focus, and I understand you've been on the show with both Craig Cohen and David Inge, is Dr. Brendan McKiernan.
I think I've worn everybody out.
I hope I can stand up to you then.
Good.
Dr. McKiernan is a professor at the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine, where he directs the Veterinary Teaching Hospital. If you have a question about pets or potential pets, call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Number again, 333-WILL, or toll free, 800-222-WILL. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. And Dr. Foote, we were just talking, you're going to be giving one's a talk and you're going to be at a booth over at Lincoln Square this weekend.
Yes, that's right. Tomorrow morning from 9 till noon, I will be at the Ready, Set, Grow event at Lincoln Square Mall. This is, I guess, kind of a family, you know, learning about organizations and safety. And so I'm going to have a booth, giving information about how children and pets can interact safely, bite prevention, and just other, you know, information on pet health care. So I'll be there from 9 till noon tomorrow, Saturday, at Lincoln Square Mall. Then Sunday, I will also be at Prairie Land Feeds in Savoy. That's on South Neal Street, Route 45 there, at 2 p.m. And I'm going to be giving a talk on helping your dogs that are afraid of thunderstorms or loud noises. And so I'll, you know, present why they get upset, why they get anxious, and then also some information and helpful tips on what you can do, especially focusing on where it's not really a training, you know, thing. It's a, you know, using products or supplements and also advice on, you know, when you need to seek veterinary help for your pet, which is now we know a lot more about helping, you know, these dogs and cats, too, with anxieties, with, say, medications that are not tranquilizers, that they're not just going to be drunk and scared in the corner.
Yeah, we're certainly coming into that season, aren't we?
Yes, that's why we schedule it for April, because hopefully we won't have a drought like last year, but, you know, typically soon we're going to start having that season.
I'm wondering, you know, wild animals, they don't have any choice as far as dealing with thunderstorms. And I guess we probably don't think if they're getting stressed or not.
They know it. Recently I was in Alaska at the muskox farm, and before one of their earthquakes, all of the cows came together, circled around the calves a day before anybody knew that there was an earthquake coming.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
They're aware of things that we certainly are not.
They really are tuned to the, you know, environment. And there have been some, I think, studies on the whole magnetic field changes, you know, especially with earthquakes in animals sensing that like a day or two before, and then they kind of orient their body, they take care of themselves, they'll go to higher ground, you know, and things like that. And so with like the thunderstorm phobia, a lot of the dogs are picking up long before the storm happens.
The big tsunami in the Far East, the animals had gone to higher ground.
Exactly right. The elephants were going to higher ground.
Right.
And that's interesting. In the case of pets, are some pets more sensitive to this than others? Or Are you going to find it pretty much in everybody?
Well, there are some pets more affected or more sensitive, if you want to use that word, than others. In other words, you know, all pets may sense it, and why some dogs or some cats get more upset compared to another can depend on a few things. It may be that pet, their genetics, you know, just kind of how they've always been. It may be that they had a bad experience happen during a storm. Exactly. You know, like your dog or might have been like stuck out in the yard and a bad thunderstorm, and it rolls in faster. You don't know. So a bad thunderstorm rolls in. They can't find shelter, you know, to protect themselves. So they're kind of stuck out in it. And so it's been a traumatic experience. So what they remember then for the next storm is when that, you know, thunder starts rolling or the wind changes, you know, and the temperature starts to drop there, you know, then they start to get scared and so forth. So it can vary a little bit on why some, why not in others. We do see some breeds more affected than others. It actually tends to be, you know, more of the hunting breed dogs and like our Labrador Golden Retrievers, say, compared to our little Chihuahuas, you know, or our Shih Tzu type dogs.
And I'm wondering if some animals do have behaviors that they use when they sense something coming. Is it helpful to let the pets do that, or is that sort of does that involve behavior which could be destructive to your house or yard or even the animal?
Well, behavior is learned, as well as there can be some behaviors that are whatever innate. So, in other words, if, say, your dog starts pacing and circling early in, you know, when the storm is coming and clinging to you, they are learning to always do this. And this is them, it's keeping them in an anxious state. So they are learning then to stay that way, which then they can become, it's easier to become more and more anxious, such that they may try to, you know, they go into panic and trying to dig and, you know, dig their way out of the house or chew and destroy things up. So intervening early with what we call a thunderstorm plan or noise plan for your pet in your home, where we will teach that pet at those early, when they're sensing like the first wind changes, temperature changes, thunderstorm, okay, go to your safe spot, which may be down in the basement or in the bathroom. That's actually a good spot for them. Go in your safe spot. You've kind of been taught to go to the little bed when it's not storming, and you get, here's your little food puzzle. So we make it good for you, and now they're like, oh, relaxed, because they can eat their food puzzle. And then they learn more calm, relaxed behaviors during the storm, plus they're in a place that's muffling the loud noises. And there's other things, too, we can, you know, do. Sometimes they might need a little medication to help them to be able to think, you know, because when anxiety gets so high, it shuts the brain down.
But. So for more details, come see Dr.
Foote. Yeah, come see me Sunday. That's a big subject.
And again, what time is that?
2 p.m.
And that's at Prairieland Feeds.
Prairieland Feeds. It's free.
That's out on Route 45 in Savoy.
Correct, yeah.
Right.
We do have a question that came in from Kelsey, and I guess this is a behavioral problem. I have a really small dog that is less than a year old. Any suggestions on how to get her to hold her bladder overnight so we don't have to let her out every 3 hours?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. This is a good question. House training is what?
It could be house training. Uh-huh. And the question would be to know whether this has been going on since puppyhood or something more recent.
And it's a dog. It's a young dog anyway, less than a year old.
Right. Mm-hmm. There could be something medical. That would probably be the first thing to worry about.
Right, that would be the first thing to screen for. Yeah.
It's not a urinary tract infection. Mm-hmm. There's not something else going on. And that's seeing your local veterinarian and check that
out.
If it's a problem of, gee, I give a treat to my dog every time they go out, the dog kind of learns that, well, if I go out at 12 and 2 and 4, I'll get a treat.
Right.
So there could be a training issue going on here. But the first thing I think I would start with, Sally, would be see you or see your local veterinarian.
Absolutely.
Rule out any medical issues.
Right. And then based on that, then there'd be a review of exactly how are we, you know, training this animal to learn to hold their bladder. A lot of times people may have started with crate training and then abandoned it for various reasons. Maybe the puppy got very upset in the crate, okay? Mm-hmm. And then you have some dogs that actually go into panic in the crate, and so it's difficult to continue to use the crate, but they haven't also asked, say, the veterinarian or any help on how else can I confine this pet, because in confinement, most pets don't want to soil where they lay.
Right.
So
a pet should be comfortable in their crate. I mean, mm-hmm. our guys, that's a safe place. It's a good place. I'm going to get a treat or I'll get fed in my crate.
Right,
it's a place to be safe, and ours is put in a quieter room to avoid noises like that when we need to do that.
Yeah.
A couple of follow-up questions from on the email. Wondering how to teach a dog to behave well in a kennel.
Again, like Dr. McKiernan was saying, now it depends on how bad things are, but initially we want to make good things happen in the kennel or around the kennel.
Mm-hmm.
I call it make it their little doggy bedroom. So, like Dr. McKiernan had said, when it's time to feed your pet, put the food in the kennel. Leave the door open. The kennel should be a place. Never banish your pet to the crate. If your pet, say, like your dog got in the garbage and you now are scolding them, and then you say, get in your crate, then they associate the crate with punishment.
Yeah, we do a go to your crate, but they know it's a treat.
Exactly. You toss a treat in there or, you know, their toy in there. And if they're already very afraid of the crate, there's steps to take. I've got some videos on my website. I do have a YouTube channel and an article, too, on my website. Or you can email me and whatever. But basically, you have to associate fun and good things with the crate. You make a game. Like, I could take a part of my dog's breakfast and one kibble at a time, just toss it around the crate, and he goes get it and comes back to me. Then I toss another kibble into the crate, and he goes in it, and he can just come right out again. And that changes it.
A game.
And the final follow-up question, and this is like one of the classic ones I've come across, is how do you get them not to bark around strangers, which seems very counterintuitive, I would think, for a dog which has adopted a family as its pack, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't they want to bark around strangers, let you know that somebody's there?
Absolutely. Very good.
So barking could be two things, I think, Sally. Tell me if I'm on base here. One is excitement. I'm really happy to see you, Jim, and I'm barking to say hi. Or I'm afraid of you, and I'm protective of children or family that's there, my mm-hmm. environment, and you've encroached in my space. So it could be either thing going on.
It can also just be, hey, look, there's somebody there, you know, just hey, look. So really, as Dr. McKiernan was saying, you know, there are lots of different kinds of barks. And so in a question like this, this is where behavior, you get a lot of history. It takes a bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say to my clients, paint me the picture. Pretend I'm watching a video. I want to know everything that, you know, I'm hearing, I'm seeing. So if this dog is barking like happily, it may be a part of how the dog learned to do greetings. And so how to diminish the barking will depend upon if we're dealing with fear, you know, are we dealing with protection? Or if this is like a happy ritual, we'll just change how the dog is being happy and lowering the voice. And, you know, part of the reason why we have dogs is to bark, is to tell us, you know, hey, wow, there's somebody at the front door. You know, somebody's crossing the territory. This is a natural behavior for the dog.
And so, it does, I think, vary, Dr. Foote, with breed. I mean,
yes,
some breeds, we actually are encouraging a little bit of vocalness.
Mm-hmm.
We have two, and one's a little more vocal than the other. But otherwise, they're fairly silent, unless there's an issue going on.
Right.
So it depends on the breed.
Yeah.
Well, this is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're taking your questions on pet care with Dr. Sally Foote of the Okop Vet Clinic and Dr. Brendan McKiernan of the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine. You can call in with your pet questions at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455, or you can email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu. Phone number again, 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. Besides phone or email, you can send your question in on Twitter or Facebook at Focus580. Another email that's come in from Michael. I have a dog and a rabbit. How do I get them to play nice together? I know there are just tons of videos on YouTube of dogs and rabbits playing nice together. You're telling, am I supposed to believe now that's not a natural thing?
Not necessarily. It depends, again, we talked about breeds. We have to look out in our backyard every day and kind of make some noise to make sure that they're not going to play together, because it may not be necessarily the nicest playtime. I think there are probably breeds that can. Oftentimes, if they're brought up together
mm-hmm.
as a puppy.
Yeah, that's a lot of it is conditioning.
Conditioning, right.
Yeah.
Are you saying then it might not, this relationship just might not work?
With an adult dog and, I guess, adult rabbit or any rabbit, first-time exposure is going to be a natural instinct in many cases, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. In other words, what Dr. McKiernan is saying is because it's a rabbit, because of how it hops quickly across the floor, dogs are are attracted to predate, you know, or chase down and to kill small little animals like squirrels, you know, and bunny rabbits out in the yard. Now, this domesticated, if it's a domesticated pet bunny and you have it and you have a dog that may not have as strong of a prey drive, but the whole thing would have to be under controlled breeding if they're both adult. Now, if we have a young puppy, like an 8-week-old puppy, now this is like, this is then, you can have that puppy with the rabbit under your supervision, where you're like rewarding the puppy for not pouncing on the bunny, you know, not mouthing the bunny really hard, see, which would be those normal, like, maybe, you know, pouncing on predating behaviors. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And therefore, now you are teaching the puppy how to be calmer on the bunny. And then if the bunny hops and the puppy playfully hops and everything's good and you reward the dog, especially, that's how they learn how to play well together. But in that scenario, that would really need to be a puppy learning how to play well with a rabbit. I would never leave a adult dog just first introduced with a rabbit together, because we could have some really serious trauma here.
Yeah. And the same, I think, Jim, would happen a cat and a dog interaction.
Yeah.
You have to be cautious about that and start off slow.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. So it's hard once they've grown up, it's hard to break whatever patterns they have set.
Potentially,
yeah.
Let's say hello to a caller we have on line one. John, on the road at I-74, you're on the air on Focus.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hi.
Hello, question. I've got two Doberman Pinschers, and the male, Ramsey, used to enjoy going on walks when he was a puppy. As he got older, he seemed more and more skittish as we got away from the home, to the point where now if I try to take him for a walk, we literally get to the property line, and he sits down, and he starts whining, and he wants to definitely go back to the home. Is it, you know, we've tried treats, we've tried, you know, taking the other dog with, and it's still the you know, same response. Is it something that, you know, I should continue trying to do, or is this something that it seems like he is set in, he just wants to be home? I don't know. Do you guys have any kind of advice on that?
John, please tell me a little bit more. How old is he?
Ramsey is now, great question. He is 4 years old now.
Okay, so a young adult, all right. Obviously, if this was a very old animal, we could be dealing with some mm-hmm. arthritic concerns right. or things like that. When did this start?
This started, I'd say, 2 years ago is really when we started noticing signs of it, and it's been within the last year and a half that, again, it literally we cannot get him off the property. You know, that's like 100 pounds of dog, and, you know, I don't want to, like, drag him in any one direction or anything like that.
Right. Have you always been where you currently are, or is this?
Yes.
He was brought up in this environment?
Yes.
Okay. I know Dr. Foote has an extensive behavioral questionnaire that my visits might be very short, and you spend, because what we're looking for are little subtle clues that the average person or the average mm-hmm. veterinarian, myself included, might not think about. Mm-hmm. Why don't I turn it over and see what else you have in mind?
Okay. A few other questions, John.
I'll go for it.
Okay. For Ramsey, at any time at all, did Ramsey ever have any experience of, say, another dog charging up to him off leash and possibly biting at him, a backfiring of a car, anything at all, even if it happened just one time?
Even 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago approximately, that may have caused him to be really upset, fearful, anything like that that
in
happened.
A fight.
Yeah, a fight.
Not that I can think of. I mean, he's a very dog aggressive
okay.
dog. Like, he's really good with people, but dog aggressive overall. And I know that there was another person walking their dog and mm-hmm. came up and, like, wanted to socialize. And he was, you know, he went to his normal, you know, don't bother me stand. But nothing, mm-hmm. There wasn't a negative, like there wasn't a fight, there wasn't a brawl, there was nothing like that. Like he, you know, I was able to, you know, keep him in one place.
John, was this the 2 years ago approximately?
Oh, yeah, it probably would have been like two to three years
okay.
ago.
Okay, right.
What was your response at that time?
I basically just, like, held him in place and, you know, I mean, still as it sounds, just talked to him until the person went away. They didn't quite get the hint that he
yeah.
wasn't wanting
yep.
to hear another dog.
Right, yep, yep. yeah. Okay, what this scenario that you just described is actually fairly common between a lot of our dogs. And like your dog, Ramsey, for whatever reasons, just really doesn't like other dogs very well. And at that young age, at about 1 to 2 years of age, yeah. that this he had not really learned, you know, being like maybe off your property on walks and having good experiences around other dogs. So here comes this other dog right up in his face.
Right.
And even though we didn't have a brawl, your dog aggression, you know, dogs aggressing on each other doesn't start with biting. It doesn't start with jumping on top of each other and getting in a fight. Actually, the tension, the anxiety, or, hey, I really don't want you around, comes with when either dog is standing stiff, staring, hair kind of raised on the back.
Yeah.
And so your dog, Ramsey, was trying to say, I don't, like maybe at first seeing the other dog, I don't like him. I don't want him around. And yeah, I know. We humans are bad. We don't read the body language very well. And so this other dog approaches and he's kind of stuck. He couldn't get away. And so then that experience, while it didn't erupt in a brawl, still had Ramsey learning like, oh no, when I go on walks away from my house, another dog's going to come right up to me. I can't get away. I don't like it. I don't want to be off of here. So he's got to actually this whining he's doing and sitting and stopping and like, I don't want to go on the walk. It's him saying, I'm too scared and I'm too anxious. I can't go forward. And you're doing and trying the right things with, say, rewards and treats. But for Ramsey, he's too anxious for him to be able to accept that treat. It's a mental state. Dr. McKernan, you could probably help me describe this out.
Well, I was wondering if you thought it would be reasonable to go, 15 feet off your property past where you were and no more. Don't try to push it. Not try to do the 5-mile walk right off.
Absolutely. You can start working with what we call counter conditioning, which is like in your yard. You start with lots of, say, ball play, and you get to the perimeter of your yard and you do maybe some treats, ball play with the leash on, et cetera. And then maybe you only go 10 feet away from your the whole time, your dog being like relaxed and positive. Now, if he cannot get to that relaxed state, okay, if he really is like, I won't take treats, I'm sitting down, I can't do it, I really strongly recommend you get a behavior consultation because you need to develop a plan that's specific to your dog, Ramsey, with your other dog and you in your home. There may be other things that's exacerbating or making this anxiety worse. There even could be some medical things, too, sometimes that makes it harder for them, sometimes chronic pain, other things like that that can aggravate anxiety. But basically, we need to start off with getting things calm and relaxed and fun just a few feet, like Dr. McKernan was saying, a few feet away from your home and gradually build it up.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Well, thanks so much for your help.
Good luck with them, John.
Thank you, John. And let's take another caller, and we can go straight to line 2, where Joyce and Champagne should be standing by. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Good morning. I have a question that's sort of related to one earlier. I just spent some time with relatives who have a female pug that's about a year and a half old now and absolutely refuses to be housebroken. And they're putting up with it. I would not. You can take this thing outside for an hour, and she will not do anything until the minute she gets back in the house. And she's not going just on the floor. She's using the furniture. She's using my shoes, which I did not appreciate. But, I mean, I know it's their problem, but I'm supposed to go back for a family reunion in a few weeks, and frankly, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
Joyce,
what can they do, or what can I do?
They've had the puppy since
just a few weeks old. Yeah,
just since a few weeks old. Okay, and this has been going on since that time.
Absolutely.
And is it something of purposefully squatting and urinating, or is it a dribbling around the house?
It's a purposeful thing.
Okay.
And it's it's like I'm going to show you who's boss, and I'm not going to do that.
They
just put up with it. I wouldn't.
The earlier call that we had related to some urinary issues, one of the things we didn't bring up was if this was more of a dribbling, then that definitely could be, in a young dog, an anatomical problem. But this is more behavioral.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
I certainly can feel for you where, you're a guest in this home, and the behaviors that this family are accepting in their home are ones that you don't want to accept. So I guess I would just encourage you to do the best with whatever is with your stay. But as far as maybe some helpful suggestions you could make to this family for them to understand why it would be good to help their pet. First of all, a lot of times people feel guilty, like maybe they did something wrong or their pet's a bad pet. For a dog that never got house training, it could be physical, as Dr. McKernan was getting towards, like if we can't, the dog can't hold urine. So still at this age, strongly recommend that get this puppy dog checked out to make sure we don't have any urinary tract infection or dilute urine where there's a huge volume and it's hard for the dog to hold it.
Right.
Now, secondly, this for going on so many different surfaces, I'm highly, highly suspicious that the dog has either a lot of anxiety or just something else that has the dog choosing so many toilet areas. This is not like a typical, you know, dog who just maybe we didn't have good follow through with training and things like that.
A male pug who's older.
Okay.
And they seem to get along fine.
Right. Okay. So you said there's a second dog in the house. Now, what sometimes happens with that another dog in the house is that you may have, say, he's urinated in places, even if it's not currently, may have been in the past. So she's attracted to marking over that. So again, this family would be good to get a behavior consult on, is because it, when you add in the effects or kind of the, what is the influence, I guess is the word I should use, of the other dog, there could even be she may be anxious because of interactions with the other older dog. And with the older dog,
that's what I was wondering about, is when they were introduced, was the older dog more aggressive to this new puppy?
No, he's a marshmallow.
Is he?
Right. Well, there still could be a little things, but by and large, puppies learn to go to the, whatever a puppy learns to go to the bathroom. I'm just going to say this out loud so everybody can understand this. They learn that. I go to the bathroom on grass, I go on dirt, or I go on the carpet, or I go on the linoleum or the newspaper. That learning happens for a puppy when they're about between the ages of 6 to 16 weeks of age. So we call this substrate preference. So it's just that frequency of we get them on this surface, you know, and when they eliminate, the other thing I really coach a lot of my clients on is when your puppy is in the action of urinating or having the bowel movement, that's when they need to hear, oh, you're such a good dog. Because that's when the dog knows here in this place right now is the right place for me to go. The problem is a lot of times people reward the dog in the house. And the dog, and maybe they just let him toddle out in the yard, unleashed, you know, nobody's around him. Mm-hmm. And they don't really know, did they go or not? And the dog comes to the door, oh, you're done. They let the dog in and they give the dog the reward in the house. So the dog wants to come in the house. Then he has a little accident on the living room rug or the tile floor. And after about four or five times of just going on that one place, the puppy thinks, oh, that's my place to go. It's like already started to imprint that
right,
substrate.
Right, good idea.
So this puppy, there may have been a little bit of, how should I say, not getting good coaching on house training. I'll put it that way. And this is an area veterinarians are actually putting more into their practices, is to coach clients early to prevent behavior problems at those first puppy exams, at those first kitten exams. And when you take your dog into the veterinarian, many of our puppy care kits have, you know, a little chapter on that. So please open those booklets, you know, please do as your staff, the veterinarian and staff recommends.
Yeah, it's a commitment. You've got years that you're going to deal with your pet, and you want to be sure you understand how to best do that, how to best train, how to interact with them.
Yeah. An older dog like this can get help, but this is a pretty deep problem. And, I mean, I can take consults by phone. There may be other people in your area, but...
Well, I don't know. As I said, they didn't have any problem training the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I don't know. It's like she's actively resisting. Just to show dominance.
No, it wouldn't be dominance. No, dominance is, I'm sorry, I just have to say this outright because the word dominance has been thrown around a lot in behavior and now we, you know more about it. Dominance is really just between two individuals. You know, Dr. McCarron here is going to say, I'm sitting here in front of you, Sally, and you can't sit in my seat. And we might stare each other down a little bit. And then I say, okay, Dr. McCarron, and you can sit there. Okay, he would be, okay, I'm dominant to sitting in the seat. But it's not like this repeated urination because there is no challenge, you know,
right,
between
right.
Who's going to, say, urinate where. This is a different thing.
It's not being alpha sitting in the doorway.
Exactly,
and you can't
right.
walk past
no.
me.
This dog just repetitively has gone to the bathroom in multiple places in the house, and that's what she knows.
Really?
And I cannot, and she, there is a capacity or an opportunity for this dog to learn differently. But what's going on here, what it will take to help get that to happen, that's where we need to get a full behavior history and also combine that with medical history.
That's going to be a long, long haul to try to rectify this.
Well, I have. We have had cases
like
this, and that's why, like, our behavior history handout we mail to people, it saves time, is like 6 pages long, but that's what we need. We need to know all about the environment, the whole home situation for this pet and the people, and then we can get going.
I will refer them to your website,
oh,
and
thanks.
If I go to the reunion, I'll hide my shoes.
That would be a good starting point, yes. Very good. And
all right, Joyce,
good luck.
Thank you very much, Joyce. Let's take a short break now, and we'll be back with more about pet care. This is Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're back on Focus with Dr. Sally Foote of the Okaw Vet Clinic, and that's down in Tuscola, if I'm correct, and
yep.
Dr. Brennan McKiernan of the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine on the Urbana side of the campus. Am I guessing right there?
That's correct, South Lincoln.
South Lincoln. You can call us with your pet care questions at 333-944-9455. That's 333-9455. Or call toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus 580. The phone numbers again, 333-WILL and 800-222-WILL. And Dr. McKiernan, I think we were talking before the show went on about different specialties in veterinary medicine.
Right.
It's not like there's one general practitioner for every problem that every pet has under the sun, is there?
No, very much like the human side. We graduate, we become a veterinarian or an MD, and then they go on, in many cases, not all, to become board certified or a specialty. And the university here is an example of a conglomerate of specialty people in large and small animal that deal with, as we were talking about, everything from guinea pigs to fish to large animals and dogs and cats, obviously. We work very closely, I hope, with practitioners mm-hmm. like Sally Foote here, Dr. Foote down in Tuscola. Actually, we've known each other for quite some time.
Yes, a long time. You're one of my teachers.
the GP, the private practitioner, the family veterinarian, your family physician is someone that you bond with, that you trust, you work with, and we hope to do the same, but provide something maybe that the routine practice doesn't, the specialty medicine.
Okay, so that's something if someone goes to a practitioner with an initial problem, they may be referred to somebody else,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's a particular problem that pet has or the particular type of pet it is.
Exactly. I'm certainly not going to try to – I've done some minor surgery scrapes and cuts and whatnot, but I'm not going to attempt to do an orthopedic hip replacement
right.
as an example or things like that, and that's done at a specialty practice.
Okay. We have another call in, and this is in line one. Alan from Mount Carmel, good morning. You're on Focus.
Yes, I have a question. I have an Australian Blue Heeler I bought at an animal rescue. It's been a real nice dog. I've had her for 2 years, but over the last 2 or 3 months, I've noticed if I'm around, she's just as friendly as she can be to everybody that comes. But if I'm not around, people tell me that she's extremely aggressive. And I was just wondering what the change was in the last 3 or 4 months could have made her that way. And I'll hang up and listen to your comment.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call. This is, this kind of situation happens sometimes. So I don't know all the answers. Again, I would need to get a lot more information to be very specific. But just in general, you said 2 to 3 months ago, she changed, and I'm assuming from being neutral, if not possibly a little friendly, when you were not present and other people would come around your property, to now being aggressive and, again, probably barking, maybe even lunging or attempting to bite when you are not present. So for your dog, your presence is helping to decrease possibly fear. Fear is the most common reason why dogs aggress. And while it may not seem like she's afraid of other people coming on the property, what she's using is that aggressing to say, stay off, get away, you don't belong here. So there may have been something a bit different happened to her when you were not present with someone coming on the property that perhaps she really had to aggress on him, get him off. Who knows? Maybe it was somebody who didn't belong on your property. Somebody...
So that's the thunderstorm.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So,
right. So then she remembers now, hey, every time a pickup truck pulls up and dad's not home, this could be bad. So I have learned, I'm learning this fear to be more upset and to be, more aggressive when you're not present. That's a simplistic answer. It's not definitely the whole answer, but if that is something happened 2 to 3 months ago to change for your dog when you were not present versus when you are present. And, you may never find out what that is. So what do you do right now? For the people who come to your home that are trustworthy, that you want to come to your home when you are not present, say the UPS delivery person, FedEx, whatever, then first of all, warn them. You got to tell them, hey, my dog's been aggressive. And I would not have your dog running loose. The majority of dogs who do biting, they are known and owned dogs. They're not the stray dog. And they usually are off-leash loose. So having your dog confined, because you got to be safety first, as we always say. But when that FedEx or UPS person, let's say your dog is behind a kennel fence or behind a fence, you're going to have them just throw over the fence to that your dog, you know, a piece of biscuit or treat that you approve of. Because now what that does for your dog is it changes the meaning of this person. UPS driver, FedEx driver, you know, whatever, your friend or whoever, coworker, you know, who comes on the property. Oh, now this person means good. And that helps to them to be less afraid because it is changing the meaning. This is the counter conditioning we're talking about.
But that takes some time. Is that right?
Oh, sure. It does take time and patience. But we also need to learn, even have some of these people maybe describe or even quickly videotape when they pull up exactly what your dog is doing. It might be that you're, you know, that also maybe get a little video of when you're present with your dog. There might be ways that, say, you might, when you come out of the house, you come out first, and that helps your dog to feel a lot, like, better because you're checking out the territory first, and that's why your dog feels more secure, perhaps, when you are present versus you not being present. That's kind of the short answer to that one.
So, and that's assuming you do want to change the behavior.
Ah, that's true. Thank you. Yes. Some people like their dogs to be aggressive. I'm not making any judgment on you, Alan. But you're right. Some people want their dogs, when no one's around, to be aggressive.
To be protective.
And to be highly protective. Now, you also have a type, a breed type of a dog. And now, it's not to say they're all this way, but the Blue Heeler is a shepherd dog. And our shepherd dogs have been selected for to be highly alert, to bark, to run after things that move quickly, you know, because that's their job to do. The cattle or calf strays away from the flock. I'm going to see it dart out, bark, and, you know, nip at the heels to gather them in. So that is kind of the innate behavior that's been selected for in this breed. Doesn't mean that your dog can't be more just, I'll just run up and bark a little bit and, oh, you're okay, and go away. We can very likely get to that. But, and I'm sure you know that most Blue Heelers will tend to bark, you know, and get a little more excited at things they see that, you know, move and stuff.
That also brings up a question, and I was wondering, for people who are getting a pet for the first time, how they decide what sort of pet they're going to get. You know, they may decide that they want to get a dog, never had a dog before. How do you go through the process of making a decision of finding out what's the right dog for you? I mean, as far as knowing what your responsibilities will be, what the dog's disposition will be. What affects maybe where you're living and how that goes
yeah,
into.
Yeah, Jim, you're sitting in front of a computer, and people talk about, what am I going to do with a computer? Well, what are you going to do with this pet? Is it going to be a house potato, couch potato,
right,
house
yeah.
potato, couch potato, or am I going to be hunting? What's the breed? What's the history? What's the family situation? Where do I live? Some thought going in before you come home with a fluffy puppy.
Mm-hmm.
As to where and what do I want to do down the road with this animal, what kind of environment and things
right.
like that. So seeing your veterinarian, your family practitioner first is a good idea, and try to describe what is there. Now, again, in a specialty situation, I don't deal with that as much as I'm sure that you're seeing, Dr. Foote.
You know, one thing, a lot of people, I think they assume, you know, a veterinarian say, like, you're too busy, I can't call your office unless I'm already, you know, a client. And obviously, if you don't have a pet yet, you're not a client of a veterinary clinic.
Right.
But I tell you what, I think the veterinary profession, our certified veterinary technicians, our front office staff, and even veterinarians, we are downright available to people, far more than many other professions. We want you coming in. We want you calling us and saying, we're thinking about getting a pet. I'm not sure what to get. You know, can I talk to you and consult? Please, please come in. Oh, honestly, that would save so much difficulty that sometimes families have because they think, oh, a golden retriever is great with the children. And they have a one-year-old and a three-year-old, and they get a beautiful golden retriever. But that dog grows up to be this 80-pound big dog that unless we've trained properly and interacted properly, yes, golden retrievers can be aggressive. Okay. Anyway, if we haven't interacted properly, it may be knocking down that one-year-old and three-year-old, and you say, oh, my goodness, this dog is just too much for us, and now we're looking at rehoming him at 6 months of age. So please call in. I think some of the major websites with the AVMA and AHA also have sort of like pre-purchase, whatever, pre-getting a pet questionnaires you can fill out online if still it's like 10 o'clock in the morning when you're at night when you're thinking about this.
Yeah.
But
Definitely make that contact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Still time for your questions about pet care here on Focus with Dr. Sally Foote of the Okaw Vet Clinic and Dr. Brennan McKiernan of the U of I College of Veterinary Medicine. You can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 toll free. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus 580. Here's a piece of email that came in from Mike. Our cat has always been big, but has grown from 16 to 18 pounds over the past year. While we are guilty of not exercising her regularly, her diet over the past year has not changed much, and her weight had been stable at 16 pounds for 4 years or so. Our vet recommended a prescription food, Hill's Metabolic, and it's hard to say if that's made much of a difference so far. What suggestions do you have, and what are the possible causes of weight gain, aside from too much food and lack of exercise?
Good questions, and it is a huge problem in dogs and cats and actually in horses. When we had Dr. Mm-hmm. Austin here, we were talking about, and he specializes in overweight horses.
All of these horses, yeah.
So it is a huge problem. Over 50% probably of dog and cat, and I'm not sure the exact numbers, 56% are obese, are overweight, and it's a significant issue. The first thing is there some reason? You mentioned the food name, metabolic. Mm-hmm. Number one, is there a metabolic problem with the animal? Mm-hmm. So a complete physical, complete blood panel to look for reasons such as, in cats, pretty rare, hypothyroidism. Mm-hmm. Other things such as diabetes, the food itself, even if it's a low-calorie, older animal type of food, if you eat enough of it, mm-hmm. So the quantity, certainly, even if it's low-cal, if you eat lots of it, you're still getting lots of cals or calories mm-hmm. into the animal. But very good that, Mike, you've observed that there is a change.
Yeah.
We're looking for changes going on here. I would start for certain with that full examination if he hasn't had it. He's been to the vet. He's got a prescription diet. The quantity may be too much.
Yeah.
As we get, I've found out, as we get older, we don't metabolize and we put on the pounds because of just age-related.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably start with that metabolic examination, a full examination, talk to them about the quantity of food, adjust it from there.
Another note, too, on feeding cats to help encourage weight loss is that, a couple of things. I'm assuming your cat's got to be over 4 years old because, you know, it said for 4 years the weight hadn't changed. As a lot of cats get older, I think it's about 90% of cats over the age of 10 may have some arthritis in the lower lumbar spine or the elbow, which can be a part of why they're less active. And so, again, like Dr. McKiernan said, a full exam, possibly blood work, or even a screening x-ray, such that then we can get them on some pain relief, which then will help us with getting the cat to move around more. Now, behaviorally, we are recommending to feed cats in small dishes hidden around the house and to keep switching that around every day because it gets the cat into more of that hunting behavior, which enhances, kind of makes the house less boring, you know, and gets them literally to move around and look for their food. And it's not mean. Just go to Pier 1 or somewhere and get those little, like, sauce dishes, you know.
Little tiny things.
Right. And when we say a tablespoon, we mean level. Tablespoon.
Yeah.
Take the
yeah.
knife and scrape off the top. And then I've never had a client say that they had food left around the house and an ant problem. So do this. And that's one way to get your cat to move around more because that movement they need. You know, they got to get physical exercise. Second thing, I tell my clients, you have to play with your cat 10 minutes every day. You're going to have to get the ball and you have to throw it for them because a lot of our cats just haven't gotten engaged in play. And it's like we have to get them in it. And then as they start doing, they lose weight, then they start playing more on their own. But those are a couple of tips. But, again, that's a big weight gain. That's about a, 15% weight gain if I
right.
do my weight, real quick. And that is significant on the health of your pet. So please follow along. The metabolic diet's new from Hill's. Yes, they will lose weight, but it's going to be a gradual weight loss, which is healthier weight loss. But stay up with your veterinarian on these other tips that Dr. McKiernan and I have talked about from the health perspective to help your cat get active and lose weight.
Good luck, Mike.
And let's go to line one now. Stephanie in Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Yes, I'm very much enjoying this program. I'm wondering if you would speak to the advantages for owners to go to a shelter to adopt a dog, in particular if they have a child psychologist. If they have children, they can see immediately whether the dog is comfortable with children. And this is also an advantage of getting an older dog, not a puppy. You see what you get. And the other advantages of getting dogs in shelters whose heritage you may not know exactly, but you can observe in other ways.
Really important question. Trying to select the right pet, especially in a household that's going to have children, and safety is a concern, as Dr. Foote has already mentioned. You do have a little side note here. You mentioned at a shelter where you don't know maybe what the situation has been. When you have a litter of puppies and you can go see what the puppies are like and what the mother's like and so forth, you get a feel for what she has maybe trained them or left them with genetically. In this situation, going to a shelter, that's a lot more difficult. You don't have that. Going yourself or maybe with the children to the shelter to see what the reaction is. If you have a couple of puppies together that you're looking at, and as one come up and is wagging his tail and is friendly, is interacting, as opposed to cowering in the back, there's already some discomfort or some fear perhaps built in there. Training the puppy, regardless of what they're like to start with, is critical. If you don't spend the time to teach your children how to behave and interact, the same will happen with a pet. You need to really work on that, and that's
Absolutely.
All back to Dr. Foote and behavior.
Right. So what I'm getting from your question is really, okay, if we're going to choose to get, say, a purebred dog versus a mixed breed dog, and do we go to the shelter and take, you know, a six-month-old, one-year-old adult dog versus puppy? A puppy being raised with children has the best potential to being good with those children, as Dr. McKiernan was saying, because you're going to teach both the child and the puppy, and as the puppy's growing up, positive, good, rewarded, you know, interactions, you've set the score, et cetera, and I don't care what breed you have. That's how it goes. Genetics is only one part of what influences behavior and that. Now, with an adult dog at the shelter, many of the larger shelters like our Champaign-Urbana Humane Society do some screening for like aggression and behavior problems. Bringing the children to the shelter is certainly a first way to see how the dog or cat interacts with kids, but really you don't know until you get them totally into the environment in which they're going to live. And that, again, is where a lot of these shelters will have good contact, or might even say you can take them home and try it. Now, before you even get the dog, you have to please teach your children the proper way to be and act around pets, meaning we do not rush up and throw our arms around the neck of the dog and give them a big hug. It's very startling and one of the biggest reasons why kids get bitten in the face. We're not going to bother the dog when he's eating. So
we're not going to run away.
Absolutely. We're not going to run away.
That's playtime.
Yeah, right. Dog chases down on you. That's getting back to that predatory, you know, reaction and possibly biting and nipping then. So I guess in short, I do believe in rehoming dogs and getting them from shelters, but go to a shelter or rescue group that has a good affiliation with screening for behavior problems and kind of the trial period. But before you even walk in that door, make sure that you've gone through with your children, knowing the proper greetings, especially with dogs and cats, that help, and knowing the body language of dogs and cats, to minimize risk of bites. And, you know, if you're not sure, come see me tomorrow at Lincoln Square Mall.
Yeah. There's so many things that you can do wrong as you approach an animal, and just learning those simple tricks will help save maybe some bites and some
Absolutely.
Bad interactions.
Absolutely.
Stephanie, thank you very much for the call. And let's go. I think we have just about a minute or two to talk to a caller in Vermilion County. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Good morning. I don't know if you've got time for this. Family expecting a first baby has a dog that was a three-year-old rescue dog, has had the dog for 2 years. Introducing the baby and the dog, does it matter whether the dog is at home when the baby comes in? And do you have any other suggestions?
We'll have to be quick on this.
Okay, thanks. Hey, absolutely, this is great. I'm giving a talk through Carl Hospital's, parent, safe baby, new parent education Great. Classes, April 11th. So I tell you what, tell this family to get a hold of Carl Clinic's, it's like Pet Safety Talk, sorry, and they can come to my talk on the 11th. They got to register. But quick answer is this. Before the baby comes home, have a family member bring, the blanket, or something that carries some of the scent of the baby. When the baby comes home, we want to make sure, first of all, this dog knows some basic commands in the home, like sit, stay, and down. Because when you're walking through the house with the baby, we do not want this dog jumping up and down on you, checking out the baby or asking for attention. So right now, before the baby arrives, you know, reviewing that. Never, if I'm getting emphatic, I hope it's getting through, ever leave this child at any age alone with the dog in the room. If you got to step out of the room and go to the bathroom, grab the phone and get a glass of water, either you pick up the baby or you take a hold of the dog and take them with you. And
safety first.
Absolutely. Safety first. And I don't care how wonderful and sweet and loving your dog is. That's, you know, how it is. I don't know if we have any more time to say than that.
I think we'll have to leave it there. But a couple of good words for advice for starters.
Good to know about the Carl talk.
Yeah.
And thank you very much for the call and the question. We've been talking today about pet care with Dr. Brendan McKiernan of the U of I College of Veterinary Medicine and the emphatic Dr. Sally Foote of the Oka Vet Clinic in Tuscola. Thank you both for joining us today.
More than welcome, Jim.
Very interesting hour. And we welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website. Go to us directly at will.illinois.edu/focus. We are likely the first result of your search on your search engine under WILL Focus. Focus is live each weekday morning at 10 on WILL AM 580 with a replay at 8 p.m. And you can go to our website, will.illinois.edu/focus, for an archive of programs. Monday on Focus, Chris Berube takes the chair to host a show about the TV show Mad Men, the times it evokes, and its cultural impact today. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon, Jason Croft, our technical director. This is Focus on WILL.